downstairs and it's understood. He's there just to take good care of me, like he's one of the family. Charles in charge of our days and our nights. Charles in charge of our wrongs and our
rights. All right, S5E7 of Fanacek. This is Keeping House Part 2. Part 2 of 3, by the way, where we look at some 80 sitcoms that heavily featured housekeepers as central characters. The first episode, we nail down three shows: Different Strokes, Give Me a Break, and Mr. Belvedere. Today, we're looking at two different shows. We're going to shift gears a little bit, look at two different shows. Then in Part 3, we're going to look at two shows that should have had a housekeeper, but didn't. Some call them bullshit on those shows. But you know what? I could talk all day, but I'd rather just jump right into it. So we're going to shift gears and talk about Who's the Boss. Why is this a shifting gears, you ask? Well, the first three shows were all sane at the macro level, right? While proving to be insane at the micro level. Meaning, they each shared premises that were seemingly normal. Like, for example, widowed single dad who needs help around the house. But upon closer examination of the individual episodes, the shows were riddled with crazy abductions, shootings, molestations, the works, right? Who's the Boss is a reverse on the trend, because if you examine the individual episodes, really, you'll be hard-pressed to find any crazy shit. But if you step back and look at the overall premise, you'll see that this show is fucking nuts. But we'll get to that in a moment. First, let's cover some housekeeping items about the history of the show. Get it? Housekeeping items? Yes, yes, I'm very proud of that. Who's the Boss premiered on September 20th, 1984, lasted 196 episodes over 8 seasons. It was the sweet story of a divorced advertising executive, Angela Bauer, and her little boy, Jonathan, played by Judith Light and Danny Pintaro, respectively. They lived a quiet life in the peaceful, upscale town of Fairfield, Connecticut. Sadly, single mother Angela was a bit of a workaholic and struggled with the household chores like shopping, cooking, cleaning. Angela knew she needed help and luckily had the means to afford a full-time live-in housekeeper, the works. I like to think that every night as Angela's head hit the pillow, she would dream of what kind of person would move into her home one day to help take care of her family. Would it be an Edna Garrett or sweet little Adelaide? Maybe a Nell Harper, right? Any one of these fine women would do. Then one day there came a knock at her door. Fresh from the shower and still in a robe, she answered the door, only to be confronted by a 35-year-old meathead from out of town driving a windowless van, by the way. Rather than reach for her rape whistle, right, she opened her heart and home to this man and his daughter and allowed them to move in and sleep only a few feet away from her and her son. This would never happen in a million years. That's why this is fucking crazy. Here's the backstory of the show. Tony Maselli, played by Tony Danza, fresh off his role as Taxi's Tony Banta. Ugh, I fucking hate that. I brought it up last time. He's a former baseball player and single father to daughter Samantha. Tony is desperate to move his daughter out of Brooklyn and into a better neighborhood and school system. He hears about Angela's housekeeping position through her mom, Mona, who was interested in fucking him. Angela, I'm guessing because she was high on crack, quickly agreed. And now the family of two is a family of four or five, if you count her uber promiscuous mother, Mona, played by Katherine Hellman. And that's true. There's an episode, I think, in a grocery store where Mona meets Tony, wants to bang him, tells him about the housekeeping position. Boom. I sound aggressive about this, I know. But this premise really is a bit of a stretch. There is a serious creepiness factor if you go back and look at the intro. The theme song, which is called Brand New Life, It loses all optimism when paired with images of this windowless rape machine van driving all around Connecticut looking for victims or Angela's house or both. I don't know what he was trying to do. Want to try a fun trick? Mute your television and watch the intro with the Halloween theme music playing. I swear to God. I swear. It might as well be Michael Myers driving that fucking van. And what single mom is going to allow a strange man and his daughter move into her house? Like, I've lived in Connecticut, and believe me, I lived there for 6 years. Believe me, that shit isn't happening. They only pretend to be liberal. They're fucking racist as shit. So that just, not that he's a white guy, but I mean, they're not moving some fucking guy into their house. Now, despite everything, this is actually a very sweet, pretty innocuous show. Like most 80s sitcoms, they relied heavily on fun guest stars. This show had Frank Sinatra, Tommy Lasorda, Mike Tyson, Ray Charles, Tony Danza's former Taxi co-star, Mary Lou Henner, she was on it. Who's the Boss also tried their hand at the old spin-off game. Mm-hmm. There was a backdoor pilot in season 3 from Mona in which she would move to New York and help her brother run a hotel. The network balked when they realized it might not be good for Who's the Boss if they lost Katherine Helmand, and Mona's show basically never saw the light of day. They eventually did get a spinoff to hit the airwaves in the form of Living Dolls. So, Living Dolls was about a boarding school for models run by a lady named Trish Carlin, with actress Leah Remini's character, Charlie Briscoe, serving as the link between the two shows. So, it's Leah Remini and her first big thing. She's the link. ABC, clearly unsure, right, unsure of what they wanted the show to be, had Who's the Boss create not one, but two different backdoor pilots for Living Dolls. It was really weird. So, S5E19, simply titled Living Dolls, was the first pilot and involved Sam visiting the models for a school project. Right? So Samantha goes to where the models live. She's doing a school project. Leah Remini's character, Charlie, was already a model there alongside a few other chicks, one of whom was model Emily Franklin, played by Vivica A. Fox. That's going to come up again. We never see or hear from these people again, right? Ever, like on Who's the Boss. That is until the season 6 episode called Life's a Ditch. In this cleverly titled episode, right, Life's a Ditch, there appears to be some backtracking because Leah Remini is back as Charlie Briscoe, but Charlie is not yet a model. Instead, she's a runaway staying with Samantha, right, and Tony's trying to reunite her with her mom doesn't want her. While there, Angela's client, Trish Carlin, the lady who runs the models, realizes that the camera loves Charlie and invites her to live happily ever after in the home for hotties, I mean models, whatever you want to call it. Once the show got picked up, Vivica A. Fox was replaced by an unknown Halle Berry, and the show went on to change television history. Or it got canceled after 12 episodes. You look it up. I'm not sure of which. I think it's the 12 episodes one. But that is the sordid backstory of Living Dolls. Who's the Boss had a few other things in common with its 80s counterparts. In season 7, they introduced Billy. Oh, Billy, the grandson of a Brooklyn friend that Tony agrees to take care of, right? So that's right, folks. They pulled the cousin Oliver. So I guess old Danny Pintaro wasn't aging well, wasn't cute and young enough anymore. Who's the Boss is also a shining example of prolonging and maintaining sexual chemistry. Tony and Angela had a whole Sam and Diane thing happening right from the jump. Unlike most shows, though, Who's the Boss didn't cave after a season or two and have them hook up, break up, make up, all that shit. They maintained a will there, won't they, until late in season 7, which is pretty impressive. The final season was largely spent on wedding plans, and even then, we didn't know how it would play out as Tony ended up taking a teaching job in Iowa, right? I'd love to be snarky about it, but it was genuinely very well done because it's a tricky thing. I mean, once Sam hooked up with Diane, it kind of ruined Cheers for a bit until Diane left. And let's face it, like, I love The Office, but what was it? The end of season 3, I think, when Jim finally ends up with Pam? After that, it was kind of boring. All that sexual tension gone. So well done to Who's the Boss. Here's something I will be snarky about, though, which is Tony being seemingly irresistible to women. There is a tremendous amount of time and energy spent throughout the entire run of this show on storylines revolving around women being attracted to Tony. Rich women, Poor women. Angela's friends, Mona's friends, Sam's friends, Jonathan's friends, women at the gym, women passing by, you name it. Women seem to love Tony Maselli. Now, I don't want to disparage Mr. Tony Danza. He was in great shape for a man approaching 40, had all his hair, and I guess he was somewhat charming. But let's be clear, Brad Pitt doesn't get as much ass as we are expected to believe that Tony is getting on this show. I mean, we're talking about a chatty, single father housekeeper here, right? Is he really that much of a panty dropper? What makes me enjoy this is the fact that it's been well documented, though, that Tony Danza was very much the driving force behind the show. It was his show. He was apparently very hands-on in all aspects of the production. I have to imagine that he was instrumental in pushing these storylines. I'm just going to come right out with it. Tony Danza was very taken, very smitten with Tony Danza. Absolutely. Must have been. Finally, let's go ahead and shout out the cast of this show. All jokes aside, Tony Danza was fantastic and did a solid job of leading and carrying a sitcom for 8 years. That's not easy to do. Judith Light is a legend and was a perfect partner for Tony. Their chemistry was palpable, and I'm glad their characters ended up together. You don't always say that. Danny Pintar was already kind of a star to kids my age when the show started, because we knew him as the kid from Cujo, right? His character, Jonathan, unfortunately, seemed to have less and less to do over the years, and I have to imagine that the actor, Danny Pintaro, was pretty frustrated. In fact, I think it was documented that he was. He basically became a set piece. I mean, he was like a fucking couch. Catherine Hellman as Mona was a breakout star, nominated for multiple Emmys for the role. Like Rue McClanahan before her, or alongside her, she proved that an older woman can still be sexually irresponsible while not catching any STDs. Yay, old people. You can do what you want and not die. Mm. And then there's Alyssa Milano as Samantha Maselli. Alyssa was my first love. My first love. As a sixth grader, I had an entire wall adorned with her teeny bopper magazine posters, Tiger Beat, Teen Beat. They came out with those fold-out one-pagers. I had them all over my wall. She and I were meant to be together. And I don't care what those police officers and judges say, right, as I record this from the bushes just beyond her backyard. But I do love her. And she too was a star when this show started. She was, of course, the cute little girl from Commando. So to a little boy my age, I was like, shit, fucking Commando. Love that movie. That's good cinema to young Fanacek. So while I wait for the temporary restraining order to run out on Melissa Milano, let's review the housekeeping prowess of Mr. Tony Maselli. Did it make sense that Angela Bowers had a full-time live-in housekeeper? Not really. No, I mean, admittedly, she had money, so I'm guessing she could afford it, but was it really necessary? Was it? She could have hired someone to clean up and shop a few days a week, maybe even cook some meals, you know, without having them move in. Remember, her mom lived over the garage, and any woman who can bang 60 to 70 guys a year is more than capable of helping out with a grandkid every now and then. The bigger question is this: did it make sense for her to hire a live-in man and his tween daughter? The answer to which is not fucking really. Right? Also, there are multiple episodes detailing his various moonlighting episodes. Why is she paying this dude and housing he and his daughter if he's putting like in 20 hours a week somewhere else? I mean, there's like multiple episodes where his cat gets a job somewhere else. So I don't think it's necessary. Did the housekeeper take too many liberties? Are you serious? Yes, he did. The fucking guy was moonlighting, driving her car. I don't know. Was he a surrogate parent? Not as much as he could have been. I think Jonathan spent the better part of every day in the bathroom cutting himself, quite frankly. I don't know what was going on with that kid, but he could use a little more Tony Maselli in his life. Did he do a good job? I have to say, yes, he did. And he looked damn good doing it. Just ask him. He'll tell you. Final grade, I'm giving this a B. He did a good job, but I don't think it was necessary. He also spent a little too much time on the dating circuit, a little too much time moonlighting for other jobs, so he walks away with a B. All right. And now the moment we've all been waiting for. Here are a few of Fanacek's favorite episodes. S1, E2, Briefless Encounter. This is only the second episode of the show. With only one full episode under the belt, the folks behind Who's the Boss decided it was already time for Tony to see Angela naked. All right. Thinking she won't be home for a while, Tony decided to take a bath in Angela's tub. Of course, as he enters the master bathroom, she's climbing out of the tub. He gets to see her in all her naked glory. This episode was all about them now being uncomfortable around each other because of the nudity. It should have been about her firing his ass for thinking it was okay to use her tub. What kind of boundaryless shit is that? Right? I would have called the cops on this fucking psycho. Anyone out there with me? Have you ever had a housekeeper? Would you be okay with them taking a fucking shower in your bathroom? That's insanity. But anyway, maybe I'm an elitist. That's my take on it. S4E5, new kid in town. Continuing with the team that Tony has absolutely zero boundaries, he sets out to find his daughter a date for the prom. Luckily, he finds one in the form of the grocery store produce guy. Let's examine this closer. Okay, Tony's daughter, Samantha, she's 15 years old. 15. Speaking from experience, no North American father is going to take it upon himself to find his teenage daughter a date for the prom. He certainly isn't going to scoop up the fucking local produce guy. And all this horseshit is predicated on the idea that Alyssa fucking Milano can't find a date on her own? Really? But we get no less than 65 episodes about Tony Danza being the most desired motherfucker in Connecticut, but Alyssa Milano struggling to find a date? Please. You should have called me, Alyssa. I was in your closet. All right, S4E12, Yellow Submarine. Bored with his housekeeping job. Told you this fucking guy was moonlighting. Bored with his housekeeping job, Tony applies for a manager position at a local sandwich shop. Bored with his housekeeping job. Here's what they say. I was in the Navy, right? Here's what they say in the Navy. Time to lean, time to clean. Find shit to do, asshole. Angela isn't paying this dude to fucking sit in his ass, right? She's paying him pretty well from what I can tell. I'm sure she must have appreciated his whole "I'm bored, so I'm going to go make sandwiches 16 to 20 hours a week." Like, how is he not getting fired? I'm going to go work at a fucking sandwich shop. Get out of here. A little sip of water. But wait. It gets worse. S4. E19. Housekeepers Unite. One of the other neighborhood housekeepers accidentally gets a glimpse of Tony's pay stub and realizes that Tony gets paid considerably more than she does. Word spreads amongst all of the neighborhood housekeepers because they clearly all meet regularly like the damn Rotary Club, and it turns out Tony makes more than all of them. As a result, they go on strike. Quick recap, real quick. Angela pays Tony more than all the other neighborhood housekeepers. We're on the same page? Okay, back to it. Rather than be grateful, Tony joins them on strike. Another quick recap, just you and I here. Angela pays Tony more than all the neighborhood housekeepers, and he feels going on strike might be a solid way to show gratitude. Okay, let's hop back in. Remember when he was bored, so he decided to work at a sandwich shop? Maybe Angela should have told him to fuck off and die at that sandwich shop. That's just a thought. But can you believe this guy goes on strike because he's the highest paid? I don't know, man. S5, E11, your grandmother's a bimbo. That's not the name of the episode. I just wanted to call anyone listening out there. This is Fanichek saying your grandmother's a bimbo. But that's the name of the episode. S5, E11, your grandmother's a bimbo. Great title, by the way. Jonathan is running for class treasurer, but his campaign gets derailed when his classmates see that his grandmother, Mona, is on the cover of a racy magazine. Jonathan is understandably upset and wishes he had a normal grandma. A grandma who enjoys knitting, rocking chairs, hard candies, that sort of thing. Jonathan later learns the value, though, of having a gilf when he easily wins the election in exchange for Mona giving each of his classmates a handy. Right? Because she gave them handies. So he won the election because of the handies. Didn't land. I'll try harder, folks. S5, E15, this one's called First Date. Angela resorts to hiring an escort as her date to an awards event. I have to ask, what did Angela's father do to her? The woman has zero self-esteem. She is single, attractive, she's wealthy. Why does she need to hire a date? I have an idea. Is Tony's produce guy still around? Can we slap a bow tie on that fella? Tony, get your produce guy. I don't know. I just don't get it. But that wraps up, folks. That wraps up Who's the Boss. Now, our next show is interesting. It has a I guess, so how would I say it? It's got a confusing, it's got a dark history in the world of television. So it's Charles in Charge. Let's talk about Charles in Charge. If Who's the Boss was a woman's drink and someone spiked it with a date rape drug, you'd get Charles in Charge. It's got a tough legacy. Like Who's the Boss, the individual episodes are largely forgettable and innocuous, right? So at the macro level, it's fine. However, the overall premise is nuts, right? The macro level. But we'll get to that in a few. What really casts a crazy shadow over this show is its legacy, like I said earlier. More specifically, Scott Baio's legacy. But we'll get to that in a few as well, okay? So first, some housekeeping items. I like that joke. Charles in Charge premiered on October 3rd, 1984 as part of the CBS Wednesday night lineup. The story is simple. The Pembroke family, mom, dad, two boys, and a girl, they need some help around the house, so they hire a college kid to move in with them. He gets free room and board in exchange for some never-seen housekeeping, too much interaction with the kids, and a primary focus on his school and social life. So it's a real good deal for him, apparently. Basically, he becomes their adult son, in my estimation, because is there a difference? It feels like they brought in a 19-year-old to feed and hang out around the house while sleeping in a guest room, but I digress. Anyway, the show tanked in the ratings, and ABC basically just placed it on hiatus, so it was goodbye Charles for a year. Now, meanwhile, Universal is looking around. They're aware that some shows were finding success via the first-run syndication platform, so they decided to get into the Scott Baio business by rolling up their sleeves and reworking the show for a January 1987 return via the aforementioned first-run syndication. And boy, did they rework the show. They kept Scott Baio and his pal buddy Len Beck, which was played by Willie Ames. He was from, Eight is Enough. But they shit-canned everyone else. Not having any network executives to step in and say this feels stupid, they also decided to start season two with Charles returning to the house from season one, mind you, only to find that the Pembrokes have moved. They sublet their house to the Powells, and get this, Charles's housekeeping duties were part of the lease. He comes with the house. So congratulations, Powells. Your house comes with Chachi and his mentally retarded friend, Buddy. What kind of fucking rental agreement comes with an actual human being? Is this the Middle East? Ugh. But I digress. I digress again. I keep digressing. So this new family, the Powells, is the version of Charles in Charge that most of us remember. This time, the dad is a naval officer, and he's out to sea permanently, apparently, because I don't remember ever seeing the motherfucker. Mom, Ellen Powells, played by Sandra Kearns, whose sister in real life is Joanna Kearns, and she was the mom on Growing Pains. Ellen's father-in-law, Walter Powell, he moves in with them to help out around the house in his son's absence. He's a retired Navy man like his son. They're both Navy guys. He doesn't have much to do besides hang out around the house, but they still need Charles, I guess, because they have this guy fucking hanging out, but it's kind of strange. Anyway, like most 80s sitcoms, the kids are far more important than the adults, so let's talk about them. They are. Oldest daughter, Jamie. She is the vapid, attractive one played by Nicole Eggert, who along with Alyssa Milano is in the Fanacek Loved Her When She Was Young Hall of Fame. Nicole would later go on to star in Baywatch alongside Pamela Anderson. And sit tight because we're going to get back to Nicole Eggert here in a second. There's a lot to unpack there. Josie Davis played the middle child, Sarah. Sarah is the smart one. Her hobbies include all things scholastic and griping about boys liking her sister more than her. Then the youngest child is son, Adam, portrayed by Alexander Polinsky. Adam is the youngest. He's also the son. I don't know what else to say, right? Some folks on this show were stars, some weren't. Guess which camp that this kid was in? Mm-hmm. So don't know much about him. Like the other shows we've discussed in this episode and the previous one, this show is no stranger to fun guest stars. Erica Aleniak had a recurring role, and Pamela Anderson also made an appearance. Alongside series star Nicole Eggert, this makes three future Baywatch stars appearing on the show. I'm guessing here, the legendarily horny Scott Baio had something to do with this phenomenon. Other guests on the show included John Astin, Matthew Perry, Sally Struthers, Rue McClanahan, and a recurring role for a pre-Top Gun Meg Ryan. How cool is that? That's kind of cool. You don't see her in a lot of sitcoms. All right. There is a theory This is an online thing, one of those online theories. There's a theory that Charles, on Charles in Charge, is the same person as Chachi Arcola from Happy Days. And Joni Loves Chachi, for that matter. First, Charles's last name on Charles in Charge is never revealed. Second, Chachi's real first name is Charles. That much we know from Happy Days. Third, actress Ellen Travolta, yes, that's John's sister. Ellen Travolta played Scott Baio's mom in all three of the shows. So she was Scott Baio's mom in Charles in Charge, Happy Days, and Joni Loves Chachi, right? What else here? I find this super compelling. I really do. I mean, this is interesting. I don't give a shit. That's what it was. But it is fun, and I thought it was worth mentioning. I'm all for conspiracy theories, but people are really digging deep when they need to, you know, look to this show to get their fucking crazy theory fixed. So, I don't know. I don't think it holds much weight, but I thought it was fun to mention. Well, I put it off long enough. Let's talk about the troubled legacy of the show, okay? It all starts with the well-documented famous sexual exploits of Coxman Scott Baio. This guy banged them all. Legendarily banged them all. He makes fucking John Stamos look like a deacon, right? And I'm fine with that. Sadly, though, he bragged about them all, too. Not cool. His MO seems to be scooping up young actresses long before they were famous. So let's be clear. Scott Baio was never really A-list. He might have been like within an arm's reach at the height of Happy Days, but Charles in Charge was a syndicated tween show that ended in 1990. By 1991, Scott's resume starts to resemble Pauly Shore's, right? But the dude kept snagging super hot, super famous ladies. I swear to God, he was parked outside of the Hollywood Greyhound station, right? He's probably wearing a sandwich board offering young actresses the mentorship that only TV's Chachi could supply. I don't know. But here's a list of some of the ladies that he's been linked to. This is real stuff. Erin Moran, of course, she played Joni on Happy Days, and apparently he lost his virginity to her. Melissa Gilbert, Beverly D'Angelo, well done, sir. Heather Locklear, well done, sir. Leslie Ann Warren, Nicolette Sheridan, Pamela Anderson, like super young, super unrecognizable Pamela Anderson. I'm talking like when she was still like a fucking Labatt's girl up in Canada. Brooke Shields, Christy McNichol, Denise Richards, well done, sir. Liza Minnelli, Erica Eleniak, Julie McCulloch. Julie McCulloch is an interesting story. She was a Playboy playmate that was famously fired from Growing Pains when Kirk Cameron became born again. And he ranted and raved. He accused the Growing Pains producers of being pornographers. Total fucking douche. Anyway, years later, Julie appeared in an episode of Scott Baio's reality show, Scott Baio Was 45 and Single. The premise of this show is that Scott, at 45 years of age, doesn't understand why he can't settle down and commit to a woman. To better understand himself, he meets with a lot of his exes, kind of like John Cusack did in High Fidelity, that kind of thing. And he meets with them all, talks to them all. I specifically remember Julie's appearance because she told Scott that sleeping with him was the only time in her life that she was worried she'd contracted an STD. The dude didn't even blink. I think this motherfucker's heard that before. I mean, he didn't even blink. She like looks at him kind of emotionally and says, you know, being with you was the first time I was ever afraid that I caught a disease. Motherfucker was like, and? Like he had heard that shit before, so it was pretty tough. Sadly, there is one famous woman I left off the list because she deserves her story to be told separately. That woman is Nicole Eggert. So Nicole and Scott both agree that they had sexual intercourse in California while filming the show. Nicole claims she was 17 at the time, which is the age of consent in California. Oh, excuse me, 18 is the age of consent in California. Scott, of course, claims she was 18, right? I get it. He says 18. She says 17. I have a hard time believing that Scott Baio could or would wait until she was 18. But that's just my opinion. I wasn't there. Nicole later claimed that their first sexual encounter, though, was in his car, at his home, in his garage, when she was just 14 years old. It wasn't intercourse, but I'll let you Google that on your own for the details. I don't need to get into that. So true or not, this is a sad story, and it certainly lessens the fun of watching Charles in Charge reruns, right? I mean, let's face it, it kind of casts a pretty dark shadow on the show. It also really fucks up the theme song. Okay? So it makes it sound super rapey. I'm gonna talk sing to you the theme song. Listen to the lyrics now that you know that he was maybe possibly doing nasty shit to a 14-year-old girl, his co-star, who plays one of the girls he's supposed to be in charge of, if you will. Here's the theme song. New boy in the neighborhood lives downstairs, and it's understood. He's there just to take good care of me, like he's one of the family. Charles in charge of our days and our nights. Charles in charge of our wrongs and our rights. And I sing, I want Charles in charge of me. Yikes. Sounds like a BDSM anthem. Charles in charge of our days and our nights? Ugh, that did not age well. Ugh. Now, there is one aspect of the show's legacy that did age well, though. At least it aged positively. Actor Willie Ames, who played Charles' best pal, Buddy Lembeck, later in real life, later found Jesus, as washed-up actors and former addicts tend to do, and created a show called Bible Man. I used to watch this back in the early 2000s in California. Bible Man tells the story of Miles Peterson, who turns to God and the Bible in his most desperate hour. Pledging to fight evil with the word of God, he disguises himself in full armor and uses scripture to fight against enemies of darkness. It lasted 33 episodes in 1995, which is about 32 episodes more than it should have lasted because I think the budget was about $40 an episode. It's not great, but it was a passion project for Willie, and at least we're not talking about his involvement with statutory rape, right, Scott Baio? So there's that. So it was basically like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers if the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers had no budget and liked the Bible, I guess. But anyway, I feel sick to my stomach with the whole Scott Baio thing, so let's wrap this up. Did it make sense that the Powells had a full-time live-in housekeeper? No. Charles didn't do anything that the cranky grandpa couldn't have done himself. Plus, the middle child, Sarah, was basically like having another adult in the house, so Charles served no purpose except eating their food. Did the housekeeper take too many liberties? I'm dying to make a rape joke. Yes, he took too many liberties, and I'll leave it at that. Was he a surrogate parent? Sadly, he was. The children seem to receive most of their life lessons from this fucking douchebag. So, yes. Did he do a good job at what? Statutory rape? Nailed it. Or housekeeping? Not so much. So, his final grade, I'm giving him an F. I give you an F, Scott Baio. Something's rot in Denmark, Scott Baio. I don't like it. Let's go ahead and take a gander at some episodes worthy of goofing on. S1, E6. I remember all the season one episodes were with the first family, so you may not recognize the names. S1, E6, Slumber Party. After a fight with his girlfriend, Charles decides to stay home that night and take a night off from women because he doesn't understand them. Unfortunately for him, teenager Lila is having a slumber party at the house that evening. So folks, I'm not sure which is worse. Charles thinking one night alone will help him understand women, or that a slumber party full of teenage girls will be taking place within 100 feet of him. Neither of those things are positive. All right, S1, E7. Discipline. Oldest son Douglas gets an F on his book report, so Charles has to go to the school and discuss it with the teacher, who, of course, is sexy and distracting to Charles. Who are these parents? Who the fuck sends a housekeeper to meet with a teacher regarding a kid's grades? In what universe would that ever make sense? I have kids. I can't imagine them getting a bad grade. I'm like, Rosita, can you go talk to my daughter's ELA teacher and figure out what's going on with her book report? I mean, that's in fucking insanity. Like, anyway. So no, don't like that. S3, E10, Dear Charles. The local newspaper's advice columnist is on vacation. So Charles's girlfriend gets him a job filling in and offering advice to the masses. Admittedly, folks, I don't know much about advice columnists or the people who would write to them seeking advice. It all seems pretty foreign to me. That said, I always assumed that they wouldn't just give the job to a 20-year-old housekeeper, right? They wouldn't do that? Maybe someone older, more experienced, maybe a college graduate? That's just my opinion. Take it or leave it. But I thought that was a little off-putting. S4, E4. Oh, this is a good one. Adam C. Adam do. When youngest child Adam needs help regarding what to do on a date with a woman, he decides to hide in the basement where Charles takes all his dates, and study his technique. Later, when Adam uses said techniques, he and Charles both end up in hot water. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Rags and chloroform are no way to treat a lady. Adam, you shouldn't have watched Charles do that. That's not okay. But yeah, imagine that, learning how to treat a woman by watching that asshole. All right, S4, E14, and E15 is a two-parter. Charles splits parts one and two. Charles gets hit in the head and becomes Chaz, a leather-wearing biker who picks up a strange woman and marries her. I'm not sure if this is a jump the shark thing or Scott Baio working on his alibi in case Nicole Eggert presses charges. Well, it wasn't me. It was Chaz. I didn't finger her. It was Chaz. Anyway, that joke made me laugh. S4, E16, curing the common cult. Jamie joins a cult and is told to give them her money and quit school. Charles, because the parents are clearly checked out at this point, Charles is tasked with proving to her that the cult leader, Abba Khan, is a phony. This sounded compelling to me. Abba Khan is a scary name. A lot of images popped up for me when I read this. I imagined Abba Khan as like a scary, like Manson-like figure running this cult. Nope, he is played by, and I'm not making this up, he's played by Charles Nelson Reilly. Holy hell, what the fuck were they thinking? The flamboyant gay guy from Hollywood Squares is cast as a cult leader named Abba Khan? I hope someone got fired over that. If you don't know Charles Nelson Reilly, look it up, and then try to see him as a fucking cult leader that anyone would take seriously. Huh. All right, quick note between you and I forgot to mention that Scott Baio directed quite a few episodes of Charles in Charge. So keep that in mind going forward. S5 E5, there's a girl in my ficus. Charles dates Tiffany Amber Thiessen, directed by Scott Baio. S5 E6, judge not lest ye be headed. Charles judges a beauty pageant featuring two women he's dating, directed by Scott Baio. S5 E8, paper covers rock. Charles dates Samantha Fox, directed by Scott Baio. I have a little quote here from actor Mart Landau. A good director makes a playground and allows you to play. Well, it looks like old Scott Baio is making quite the playground for himself. Yeah, I'm directing this next episode. Let's do one about me dating, I don't know, that girl from Saved by the Bell. And we'll throw her in a bikini. Sound good? All right, action. Quiet on set. Roll sound. Background. Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Anyway, that was my horrible Scott Baio impression. It doesn't sound anything like that. All right, last one. S5 E17, all that Chaz. Charles gets hit in the head again and becomes Chaz again. Directed by Scott Baio. And I know why. The Greyhound station was closed for remodeling this week. So he was not able to feature a young hottie who didn't know better. And that concludes the portion of this chapter featuring shows with housekeepers. I think we've all learned a lot. And we've come out on the other side as much better human beings, right? You're welcome. You're welcome for this. Now, I'd like to take a closer look at two shows that did not have housekeepers, but you're going to have to wait till next week for that, because that will be in Keeping House Part 3. So this concludes Keeping House Part 2, S5 E7 of Fanacek. If you like the show, rate and review it. I know I sounded rough on this. I apologize. I'm coming off a cold. My throat's scratchy. I had to stop a few times to drink some water, but I fought through because of you. I do it for you. I do it because I love you. So rate the show, like it, hit me up on Twitter at Fanacek Podcast, hit me up on Facebook, Real Fanacek, email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. I have a YouTube channel, go look it up. I've interviewed some fun celebs, a lot of them were 80 celebs. Jeremy Miller, Jeremy Licht, Eddie Deason from Greece, all kinds of fun people. Go look it up. And really what I need you to do, you know, besides Googling all the creepy shit that Scott Baio does, do that. I mean, do that too. But while you're doing it, maybe just stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.